Hello, this is John Cork of the Ian Fleming Foundation, introducing the audio commentary of Moonraker, the 11th James Bond film. This audio commentary features a conversation with director Lewis Gilbert, screenwriter Christopher Wood, associate producer William P. Cartledge, and executive producer Michael G. Wilson. We begin with Michael Wilson.
So here was our opening. Do you remember we had this? This is the way they transported the shuttle.
It was interesting this because a lot of people didn't think it was surreal, but actually they did transport them like that. Yeah. They still probably do, don't they?
They still do, yeah.
With this load on our back, that's good going.
Just trust the RAF, sir.
Of course, this model stuff was done by Meddings.
Yeah.
That's right.
He's also passed away, of course. Yeah.
Interesting kit these guys are wearing, really. Looks like Angel Coffee Bar rather than more than hijacking airplane.
This is interesting because it's sort of prologue before the other prologue.
Because lots of people
do that before or afterwards, Mike.
In the
well, a double one, isn't it?
It is a kind of double one.
Because we went down to Get Me Bond, right?
Well, yeah, because this is actual plot that you need to know about, whereas the normal hook is just to sort of get you in the mood, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I remember this one because, Christopher, this was your line, wasn't it, coming on? Whereas Bondi's on his last leg, I remember.
Oh, cut.
I was amazed the way they shot that. I never realised there was a double entendre associated with it, you know.
There was a few in the picture. Obviously, it's come as a shock to you.
But lots of people thought that that opening sequence was our usual song sequence, and were rather disappointed.
Yes. Well, we've cheered them up now, then, haven't we?
Any higher, Mr. Bond, my ears will pop.
It's
interesting, though, to watch for the special effects in this film because, you know, the advances in special effects have been rather extraordinary, haven't they, in recent
years? Well, I think considering that we did it all for real, you know, it's incredibly good.
Yes, right. This is where
we live. Now, we had B.J. Worth.
Oh, dear.
Organized, you know, doing this with a skydiving team. Do you remember them?
Oh, yes. It was fantastic.
And John Glenn and I went out to Pope Valley, California.
That's
fine. Spent 6 weeks doing this before the film started.
Jolly good.
I'm often asked, actually, Michael, how many takes it took.
It was 88
jumps.
The skydiving was 88 jumps.
Yes, that's what I believed, yeah.
It's one of the best sequences, both this one and in the one before.
88 jumps to get just, 2 minutes?
Well, that's whatever this is. And you know what, the whole thing depended on us getting the right helmet camera.
Yes.
And I found that special lens in Paris.
That's right, it was a plastic lens, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 30mm experimental lens that was anamorphic. So this is the first time we did anamorphic skydiving. So.
It was great, though, wasn't it? It was terrific, all this
stuff.
Yes,
the whole point about it is...
Because it's for real.
I mean,
you can do this for not real today, can't you? I mean, but this is for real. I mean, that's what's so extraordinary about it.
I think the point is
this
camera...
This actually happened, I mean...
Yes, and the camera is attached to the cameraman's head.
Yes.
Yeah, and he couldn't weigh more than 16 pounds or it would break his neck when he opened his parachute.
Yeah.
That was a challenge.
He probably had the most dangerous job of the lot, the cameraman.
Where are they doing this? Is it over Southern California?
Yeah, this is Pope Valley. It's up in Northern California.
I mean, it is incredible that it's actually for real, isn't it? That's what's so incredible.
Yeah, this is Randy DeLuca was the cameraman here. And, you know, he passed away... I don't know, only a few years after this. It wasn't an accident or anything. It was just kind of a disease. It was really a tragedy. He was a young man.
It must have been pretty difficult trying to do this in midair, too.
It's fantastic. I have forgotten how long this sequence is.
Yeah. Nice, great sequence.
So here comes
Jules. That's a great shot.
Mm-hmm. And the
Yeah, they don't make them like this anymore.
So we brought Jaws back again now. This was his introduction to the film.
You know why he's going faster than Bond, don't you? He's got those teeth in
his mouth. That's right. Is that magnets? Very well done, though.
Just dropped in for a quick bite.
Yes.
We should just have a little tribute to Morris Binder, who did these great titles. And the only thing about it was, of course, that it was usually finished like 2 days before the premiere, sometimes on the actual night of the premiere, which was a little bit difficult. But he was a genius in his own way.
I thought these were rather
one
elegant.
Of his best.
Yes.
Mm. I love this song, too.
Yes.
But it's funny, it's not a bad song, but it was never became popular, though.
No.
She sang it very well. I mean,
oh yes, she sang it very well.
It might be, of course, you know, analysing that it was a little familiar in a strange way.
What, the title? You mean?
No, I mean the song. It had a sort of
It was much more of a ballad, wasn't it?
Yes.
It's intriguing to me because if you see Out of Africa, some of the themes are repeated in that. Yeah.
Well, of course, old. John has a style, doesn't he, that's very recognisable.
Yeah, his own record's done very well. It's very, quite a good one.
But I find that if you're associated with a Moog, as you obviously are, then the song automatically takes on an additional meaning to you personally.
Well, because you hear it so many times.
Well, also, you can hear it years later, can't you? It brings back all the memories of all the things we did, you know, on that movie going around Brazil and those Learjet. The whole thing was really splendid.
Morris's customary naked ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, see, you know, he'd bring you in when he was getting near the time he was going to assemble it all together, and he'd have 3 and 4 stacks of film on top of one another, and you'd just barely be able to see through it, and he'd kind of run it through the old moviola so you could kind of get an idea of what this was going to be like. But you never knew what it was like until it actually came out on the screen.
Yes, yeah, so as you rightly recall, very late. You know, these films always had a sort of opening date, and the last thing to come up was the titles.
That was interesting. The cameraman on that film then, of course, it was going to be Claude Renoir, but Claude got sick and had to come off before we began. Do you remember that?
6 weeks before we were due to start shooting.
Right.
He had to bail out.
With his eyes, yes.
We ought to just say who's here. That's Bill.
Like.
That's Bill Carlisle.
Nobody
ever
looks,
Bill, so they
nobody
know
ever looks at my name. They're just looking at the girls.
Oh,
and that's for Christopher
this
Wood.
This is the bit I like.
And
here.
Christopher Wood, that's you. Say hello.
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 And of course, hereafter, I'm Michael Wilson. And of course, following the. Here we are.
There's Lewis Gilbert, you see. It doesn't look anything like Lewis,
yes,
actually.
I'm the only one that they know in this.
And there's the famous set. Now, that set never changed, did it?
No, it's good. Well, it did.
Are you still using it?
No,
it did. That was a Ken Adams set.
I love this bit of the movie.
Who's in there?
Q and the Minister of Defence.
You don't believe me, do you?
No, but the point about this set is, of course, it was a standard set that lived at Pinewood, and we actually transported the whole set over to Paris.
That's right,
if you recall.
Well,
that's why I asked the question.
Probably cheaper than
building. Where's the padded door? Oh, the padded door
the padded
we still
door.
Have.
Yeah. That's it there, yeah, lovely.
It's the only thing left now.
Yeah.
Moonraker?
What do you know about Moonraker?
What I read in the newspaper, son.
Then you'll know that Moonraker, the space shuttle, was being flown over here on loan from the Americans on the back of a 747.
That's a very good suit on Roger, isn't it?
Yes.
He's looking good in that.
He still looks quite good on it.
He's very well dressed in this film. Yeah. The only thing that I find interesting, of course, is it's slightly stylized and some of the sort of long collars and things like that. It's interesting how clothes date a picture more than almost anything else.
Does he wear a safari suit in this?
Look at that collar, marvellous.
He's with a fine tooth comb, but there's no sign of Moonraker. Not a trace.
Are you suggesting the shuttle was hijacked in midair?
That's for you to find out, 007.
The shuttle's built in California by Drax Industries.
Yes.
We were responsible for the safety of
that. That was the first time you heard Roger McCloy.
No, he was in Spy, wasn't he, as the Minister of Defence? Isn't he supposed to be the Minister of Defence?
King,
Jeffrey King.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. We had him in Spy, he was
another. Yes, it was the second time.
Yes, obviously the government hasn't fallen yet.
Not yet.
That's all, gentlemen.
Just a minute, 007. I've got something for you.
Was that the last one he was in?
No, I think he was.
I think he didn't come out in For Your Eyes Only. He was ill at that time, so yeah. We had another fellow.
It's activated by nerve impulses from the wrist muscles.
Like this?
This is the bit I like, when he puts the dart in the rearing horse, making it look as if the horse leapt up.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
I see, yes.
Little touch, you see, Bill?
Mm-hmm. Written on the page, no doubt, right, Christopher?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's one of the green or blue or pink or yellow or, you know, bronze ones.
Now here's a wonderful Bond setup, isn't it, always? Here's the kit that's going to be used very shortly in some sort of imminent danger that's forthcoming. Well, this was Los Angeles Airport, wasn't it, in fact?
Yes, we went out there and shot this stuff.
I like it already.
I think we were out there... we went out and did some stuff around Ames Research Center. Remember, we all went out to Ames for that stuff?
Yes, I do.
My name is Corinne Dufour.
Oh, and you're going to be showing me around, are you, Corinne?
No, I'm just a humble pilot in the service of the Drax Corporation.
This is interesting to me because I originally wrote this part for a sort of slightly ditzy Southern Californian valley girl. And when the whole production moved to Paris, including the office cat, it had to be played by a French girl. So I think I'd have liked a chance to tweak the dialogue.
She was quite pretty.
Yeah.
That's where the Moonraker shuttle is made?
That's right. Workshops, hangars, design and experimental blocks, test centers, everything.
Very impressive.
This is a model here.
Good.
Yes, the model's got him pretty
This is some of our stuff we did out in...
obsessed with the conquest of space.
That was out in the valley back
in
LA. Yeah, we did a lot of different stuff, different places.
Yes, it's interesting, this film in particular, how all the different locations are all spliced in. Now, that is an interesting shot because...
Yeah, very good.
That is a real place in France, superimposed on a desert.
Cute, isn't it?
Magnificent.
Yeah,
and here's the actual real location.
More than a place, one might even call it a chateau.
We call it a chateau. Hmm. Oh, yes. They're still doing it, by the way. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. I'm just trying to remember what it's called, this...
Vaux-le-Vicomte,
which was built by the Minister of Finance.
I thought it was Ken Adams' weekend cottage.
Seems to have an eye for a good investment.
And I thought Michael Lonsdale was a great choice for this one.
I think he was almost the first laid-back heavy.
Mm. Yeah. Stromberg was quite laid-back.
He was like, yes, that's true. Mm. Did you write that part as well?
I think, Misha was so laid-back, he was almost horizontal, I thought, in this row.
But this is the... one of your great lines is coming up here, Christopher. I love the one where he says, "See that, take care of Mr. Bond, see that some harm comes to
him." Yes.
Classic Bond line. Gets in all the.
Do you remember also how Cubby didn't like the line that we took the line from Oscar Wilde and tweaked it? Do you remember when Cubby had made this exceptionally successful film with Peter Finch, on Life of Oscar Wilde, and he thought it was a bit of lèse majesté, and we had to persuade him that it was in fact a homage, when he says to lose one, the rake would be, etc.
Yes. Well, that wasn't a tweak, that was a definite pinch.
Yes, well, it is.
You mean you didn't write that line yourself?
Mm-hmm.
There we are.
You know, this is where we got the idea that there were beautiful women in Bond films. Do you remember that?
What, you mean there hadn't been any before?
Well, the idea that they were all over the place.
Yes, good job.
Heaps of them.
Mr. Drax. Well, to apologize in person for the loss of my space shuttle.
And Lady Victoria Bevan actually exists.
Does she?
Oh. She's not a lady. Well, I mean, she is a lady, but she's...
Why would you say?
She doesn't have a title.
Yes.
I like the dogs are really well trained.
Will be made to the American government, Mr. Drax. When we've discovered why there was no trace of the Moonraker in that wreckage.
And your loyalty commands respect, Mr. Bond. You have arrived at a propitious moment, coincident with your country's one indisputable contribution to Western civilization. Afternoon tea. May I press you to a cucumber sandwich?
Thank you, no, nothing at all. The shuttle, is it made entirely here in California?
No, I own a number of subsidiaries.
May I press you to a cucumber sandwich, was one of your... I haven't quite figured out what that means, but I guess...
Well, you've lived in England long enough, people say that to you all the time, surely, Michael.
He meant to say, can I press you to a cucumber sandwich with me?
Or skills? Both. Mr. Bond.
Now, we did that with Donald Pleasance, where we got the sort of great big scar going.
They're good, and they just eat away as soon as you
cook. That's French meat.
They were quite well trained, those dogs.
They were.
Well, she had a nice decolletage.
Yes. We'll escort you to Dr. Goodhead, who will show you around. Ask anything you like.
Here's an interesting thing, because this set actually wasn't part of that exterior building. We shot this somewhere else.
Yes, we did. This was shot... No, we shot this in that building.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
This was a different location.
In Paris, wasn't it? In Paris, somewhere.
See that some harm comes to him.
It's an example of how you can have locations, exterior locations, and interior sets that are different. And this, of course, is the Pompidou building.
That's right.
That's right, remember, they had the long escalators outside.
Which I don't think anybody had filmed in up to the present.
No, they had not.
It was fairly new, wasn't it?
This is a kind of set within the Pompidou building, in fact.
Holly Goodhead, of course, is an invented name in the long, category of pussy galore, etc.
In the good tradition.
Exactly.
Of subtle names.
Right.
James, to my friends.
Holly Goodhead.
Are you training to be an astronaut?
I'm fully trained. On loan from NASA, the Space Administration. Well, Mr. Bond, I guess we'd better get started. You don't want to lose time as well as the space shuttle, do you? This is it. The Moonraker. Capable of being launched into space by rocket
or... Orbiting the Earth and re-entering the atmosphere to land like any conventional aircraft.
This is the centrifuge training.
It simulates...
Well, now this was a famous set.
Oh, this was a good sequence.
The centrifuge.
What I like about this, you see, is we really see Bond under pressure. Do you remember on this one, I was always saying, we've got to hurt him, we've got to make people think he's really... Because Roger looks so ineffably calm and relaxed the whole time. You want to see his eyeballs jumping out of his head occasionally if he's Bond.
Strap yourself in firmly.
Yes, Doctor.
Now your arms. That's to prevent you from knocking yourself out.
I see.
And again, there's an interesting thing about this set, of course, is that it was built for real. It didn't go as fast as it appears to go in the movie. We obviously sped the camera up, although it's not obvious, I don't think, on the film, but... It did actually work, this
yes, it did.
Right.
Set.
The whole thing worked.
It worked, but it didn't work as fast as
no.
It looks, though, yeah.
You make a great sale.
But these days, I'm sure you'd come up with some sort of CGI scheme to do this.
Yes, you could
but
do it quite
this
easier,
set was,
actually.
I don't know, must have been...
And to get the effect of the... sort of the false gravity we used to air pressure.
Air pressure, yeah.
On his face. Yes, you can see that later on. It's quite effective. Again, you'd probably use a some kind of computer graphics now for that sort of shot.
You want me?
Mr. Drax said to telephone him.
All right, I'll call him from my office.
This is definitely a Ken Adam design, though.
Yes.
Because the real one was sort of very functional looking. His is highly designed.
Yeah. All this stuff, I think, is very well done, really.
Yes, I think that's right, Michael. It's interesting that most of these things in Bond films are actual designs and practical things that are then breathed on by the design department. So this centrifuge was based on a real one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was one up at Ames.
Yes.
Just a people.
There we go. Good stereo in this, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find this very frightening.
It's all well put together, too.
Yes.
Well shot and well edited. John Glenn, who later became
great
a director.
Dialogue too.
Yeah, wonderful dialogue in
there. Well, thank God for small blessings. You know. Just oohs and ahs in this one.
People always forget
that's the chicken button, and it isn't working, and he's in deep trouble.
Yeah, and now you can start to see us playing the air pipe. Roger's face was quite bruised after this, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't easy for him
from having this. High pressure, very small nozzled high pressure hose on his face, and bruised his cheeks quite badly. Doing.
Phew. Thank you, Q.
Well, he looks very sad.
Good scene.
You want to give him a hug almost, don't you?
It's funny how all the Bonds have been really quite different, haven't they? I mean, the Bonds themselves.
I notice when people talk about Moonraker, they talk about that sequence. It obviously made a big impression.
Which sequence?
That sequence.
Really?
Because, you know, yeah. Because I think people did rather like the laser sequence of one of the earlier ones. Do you remember that?
Goldfinger.
You think I'm going to talk? No, I think you're going to die, Mr. Bond. It has that same kind of.
It was very good. That was a jolly good sequence, too.
I like to see Bond vulnerable like that, you know, rough or, you know, just as we would be. Well, it's
well,
like
you.
It's marginal, I suppose.
He's only got a minor headache. I mean, it seems to come to him pretty quick. He's got his eye on that guy. I don't think he's going to last the movie, does he, that kid?
Play it again, Sam. I think it's his exit.
These were beautiful sets, though. They weren't sets, they weren't for real, but they were really lovely, aren't they? They're all French. They did know how to build this stuff.
We now approach my most hated line in any Bond movie, which I'm held responsible for, which is changed. A terrible line where she says, "I never learned to read." Oh, God.
Who says that?
She does at the end of the sequence, and it wasn't the line I wrote, of course. She's supposed to
what
say.
What did you write then?
What did you write? It's like a terrible line.
What about that list of your mothers? And she doesn't say what list, she melts into ecstasy. You know, this is the apogee of her sexual life as a woman. She says, what mother?
Well, thank God we changed it.
You could have changed it to so many other things. You just become a telephone. Like if she just said, I burnt it or something. But saying, I never learned to read makes her look like an, you know, imbecile.
Well, she doesn't mean it, does she? Obviously, everybody knows that she learned to read.
Yeah, but I mean, she's such a wet...
by the way, for all those that are listening to this stuff, this is what happens when you're on a story conference.
That's right.
It goes on ad nauseum. It sort of stirs up a lot of old memories I'd rather forget.
Well, mind you, that's why the action sequences continue on Bond films, because people get bored with this and say, let's just have another action sequence and get on with it.
Yeah.
What about that list of your mother's?
Here we go.
I never learned to read.
John Tournier did a good job, actually.
Yeah, he did.
On short notice, because...
Yes, absolutely.
Although he's a very good cameraman, he had the difficulty of approaching a lot of these locations and sets without any forewarning.
That's right.
Because by the time he was attached to the movie, we'd done all our major scouting and recce.
That's right.
So very often he'd approach these sets...
Well, hardly happened to.
...without any preparation.
That's true.
What are you doing?
You whetted my appetite for information.
Beautifully constructed set, isn't it?
Yeah, it is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Well, it's the way it's used that counts.
James, no!
Yes.
Mm.
Very clever.
Ken strikes again.
Yeah, he did. They said that was very good stuff.
Big vertical sets, weren't they? Very tall.
That's on this film, actually.
Yes,
there's a couple of sets on this film where they're up and down sets.
When we get later in the film, and so you had, you know, how do you show the set when you've got a letterbox to look through?
Yes.
That's amazing.
There you are, you see. You have a heart of gold.
18 carats.
I think that was a nice gag, by the way, the X-ray cigarette case.
Yeah, but the one just then.
Yes.
Yes, that was good.
In a way, you could have used that a bit more.
They always did it once, didn't they?
A lot of these gags only ever happen once.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a giveaway as to what he is.
Well, that's one of the things that is extraordinary. He's supposed to be a secret spy, but he always goes around the world giving his name to everybody.
Well, the name's all right, but
nobody ever recognizes the name, do they? You think they might have caught on by now?
What I think is really incredible about James Bond film, in most countries of the world, because they're dubbed into a different language, they think it's there. Right. You know, they think he's French or German or whatever.
Take care of yourself.
And you.
I suppose it's got a nice old-fashioned cinematographic touch that it makes everybody jump. You think something's going to happen. And that's a good...
No, it's very good. It made me jump. I'd forgotten it.
Yes.
Well, in a theatre, of course, where it's much louder, you would have jumped more.
Was that Lady Victoria Bevan again and her friend? I've forgotten her.
The bird?
Again. Well, no, there are two birds in the background.
Beg your pardon.
That's a nice car, isn't it?
Yes, a good non-sequitur, that car, Lewis, if you don't mind me saying so. Yes. I don't know what it was quite there for, I was expecting...
I thought that was Ken Adam.
You're almost led to think that this car's going to be doing something.
Yeah.
I think we just found a nice car, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, Roger arrives in it. He always arrives in it.
To a fanfare?
Yeah.
We had a lot of trouble with this scene, as I recall, to do with the pheasants that kept going rotten. Because we shot the thing over about 5 days, and of course these damn pheasants started going a bit high.
And la signorina, she was a very famous model, the one on the right.
We've got two more girls, yes. Suppose, weren't we?
These girls aren't turning their nose up on account of the people. It's the smell of the pheasants in the background.
Absolutely.
Unless you're a pheasant.
There they go.
Really, Mr. Bond. Take my gun, a stray bird may fly over.
I only stopped to thank you for your hospitality.
I'm afraid it will get you to the airport in plenty of time. Come now.
Wonderful business with the name of guns here.
Yeah.
So it goes back to Ian Fleming and naming sort of rare and wonderful things.
So this is the...
this was product placement from Fleming Star, wasn't it?
This was the fellow who was,
I doubt if
I... Did you miss Bond?
Yeah.
You missed your shot.
Yes.
Did I? He says.
It's a very long-winded sequence to get Christopher Wood's clever dialogue to work.
Over there.
Here we go.
You missed, Mr. Bond. Did I? As you said, such good sport.
He's accepted.
So now everybody knows what's going on at this point.
Yeah, except the guy.
He just glides off in the middle. Yeah.
Except the guy in the tree, of course. He's had it. Of course, it's quite interesting in Bond films how people are dispensed with without too much fuss and bother.
Yeah, I always say, when you think of all the things that happen when you're shot. I mean, please.
Now this is when these dogs take her down.
Yeah. Yes.
Pretty gruesome scene. This.
When I saw this scene at the premiere, I was sitting behind the Duke of Edinburgh, and when she walked into the wood. He suddenly sprang out of his seat and said, "Stupid girl, don't go in the woods." It was lovely.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
You think we preempted the Blair Witch project by about 20 years, do you?
But I remembered these dogs as being not as good as they seem to be now.
Well,
I thought
not
they
so
were
cuddly.
I thought they were a bit under-trained.
It's a matter of
this is nice.
Just the parts you use, isn't it?
These woods, in different circumstances, are sort of rather romantically lit, aren't they?
Yes.
It's like the Gobi tree.
Yeah,
well, that's the part of the...
It was always
the irony of it all, isn't it?
It was quite difficult because of always when you put mist like that, there's always a wind that comes up and blows it all away.
It's
just at the right moment.
Actually, in practical terms, when people say a misty wood, you can add another 2 days to the schedule.
That's right. It's always tough, actually. Good sequence.
Well, there you go.
Oh, shame we cut away.
Well, you wouldn't now, of course.
We are in Venice.
That was a good cut, wasn't it? From that to the old tolling bell.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember I wanted to try and use that, to foil the baddie by getting him to stand against it, so he clonked him on the head.
Now here's a scene of David and I coming in right on the right hand side. Did you see us coming into the camera? There we are.
Oh God, you look young there, Michael.
You can see we were too bloody mean to pay any attention.
Could I interest you in something?
Well, I'm tempted to say yes immediately.
Covey was in, and Ken was in that square somewhere.
She was very pretty, Polish girl.
We got to the point whereby there were so many people milling about, in the end, actually, you could sort of... we just shot anyway. Do you remember those things?
Oh, God, yeah, it was difficult, wasn't it?
It was something of a nightmare, really, trying to shoot in St. Mark's Square.
Oh, God, yes.
And this is a live location. I mean, what you saw in the background there was the actual...
Yes, the actual place.
Yeah, this is... we shot all in Venice. And this was shot on the island of Murano.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For glassworks.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. It's always a complication shooting films on little islands because you have to take literally everything with you. Yeah. And this is quite a small island. And
it was.
Basically, there's this factory there, and that's about all.
Aha, bit of plot there, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to pay reasonable attention in Bond films, don't you? Because you leave a lot of clues about
that's
early
right.
on.
Yeah.
There's no point in dozing off early.
Oh, let's do all down.
And you, of course, you know when you go to a glass museum with Bond films.
Let's get the subject. Yes. It's going to be a bit of carnage.
Yes.
Yes. This exquisite bowl was fashioned about 1520. Over 450.
Now it's interesting again how you juxtaposition locations, because this is a set that we shot in Paris.
Yeah.
So you've gone from a live location in Venice Island
to a studio.
To a studio shot, and it looks pretty seamless, I must say.
Yeah, this is always the big thing, isn't it?
Over here, we have something very, very interesting.
Through a glass darkly.
This little sword, the only one of its kind in the world, was owned by General Minotti in the late 1870s.
She just said, didn't she? Though?
She's a pretty girl.
Oh, Dan, yes. She's a very sweet girl.
We are back in Venice again.
Yeah.
That was in Venice.
Yes, and that's those steps just off the Grand Canal. As you say, Lewis, it's hard to make Venice look anything other than beautiful.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful area here.
Dr. Goodhead.
I can only hope your presence here is a coincidence, Mr. Bond. I just like being spied on.
Well, don't we all? Hmm. You're staying with Daniele, aren't you?
Yes. How did you
She know? Was an early Bond feminist.
Yes, that's right.
This character. Probably the first. Oh, I suppose...
Well, no, because Spy Loved Me was the first, really. Yeah.
People forget that.
Yes.
She was very much as Bond's equal in Spy Loved Me.
There again, yes. Forgetting that you are more than just a very beautiful woman.
If you're trying to be ingratiating, Mr. Bond, don't bother.
But I think we all, and I don't just speak as the male species, we all quite like Bond as a bit of a male chauvinist, don't we?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what he was. And
that's what he should be, really.
Yeah.
Not immediately, but I'm sure I shall.
Franco!
God, you remember this? Oh, God, this is an amazing sequence.
Do you remember I wanted to have a motorbike chase through the islands? I still think it would have been a great idea. Because we could have bounced the motorbike off vaporettos and gondolas. And,
Listen, Chris, we had enough trouble getting permission to shoot a high-speed chase through the damn canals as it was.
I remember that, yeah. God, it was very difficult.
The thing about this sequence, as you will well recall, Lewis, is we had the embarrassing situation with this rather elaborate coffin and
funeral, yeah.
And just as we were about to start shooting the sequence, a real one came by.
That's right.
And nobody quite knew how to behave themselves.
That's right. That was extraordinary, wasn't it?
It was quite extraordinary.
And this was one of our special effects guys, wasn't it?
Who
was in the...
That's right, it was in the...
It wasn't a real actor, it was one of them.
That's another...
It was a rotten shot.
Rather a lot of trouble to go to, a bit sore.
Yes.
Well, that's true of all the Bond films in that way, isn't it? Otherwise there's no film if you just shot him.
Well, the idea is to get to the end of the gag, which is about to forthcome and show you.
Yeah.
Whoops.
That's lovely. That's very good.
Remember this guy going through here?
Oh, we told him that he'd have to be in the coffin when it went through him, or we told the...
But this was quite tricky shooting, this stuff, because, as anybody will know that knows Venice, the speed limit's...
Remember Alfie?
5 knots. Yes.
Ha ha ha.
that was a case of, unfortunately, calling an actor reasonably early in the morning and not requiring him until 4 in the afternoon, by which time he'd had a good lunch.
This was quite a good one. I saw this in another Bond film, not so long.
Yeah.
It may have been another film.
Do you mean they made another one since
this one, like that.
Now, here's one of the more complicated sequences that we were ever asked to do.
God, this was tough, wasn't it, this one?
It's a number of different shots, of course, models and everything else, but again, this particular shot here and the next one was genuinely on the steps.
That's
where
right.
We had hydraulics.
That was difficult, wasn't it?
I think we spent a month in that area building the hydraulics that were required to do just
this
those two or three
tag.
Shots.
There's Chunky
Hughes.
Yes,
this
that's the grip.
Grip.
And that's the
same gag we had in Spider-Man with the same bloke.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's our cameraman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stillsman.
Stillsman, and that's a pigeon.
That's right.
So we got the whole crew out here doing little things.
Yeah. That pigeon shot.
This always went very well.
These were two French stuntmen.
That's right, yeah. That was a good sequence. That went well then, Tetris.
Yes, I'm always amused by this shot because the moon in the background, of course, is for real.
It's for real.
And most people think we painted it in.
That's right, it's lovely, isn't it? It's beautiful. Again, Venice.
Ah, I'd forgotten Roger was sporting his gondola kit.
Well done.
Some of the old technology still works.
Roger's looking good in this one, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Guys, these are them.
What I love about Bond films is that you can never trace the origins of the ideas, can you? It's always somebody's idea, and you can never remember who actually thought of the idea.
Well, I think that's one of the nice things about it, actually.
Yes,
I mean,
it's sort of very much committee-driven.
Well, I don't
it,
suppose it's changed any, Michael, has it, in the sense that you feel there's a good community spirit of ideas.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're not too elitist about
That's what makes it fun, I think, and that transmits itself to the film itself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And a good idea has many fathers on a Bond movie, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, very often prominent idea, the development of it, does require an awful lot of different talents.
That's right.
Exactly. Which make it better and better and better.
Yeah.
It's Chanel number 5, he's saying
Yes. And of course, the point of the gag is, and I'm not sure whether it ever really came through properly, is that he then gets involved in a nice glass fight. Very subtle, this. And yet the one piece of glass that, of course, should get broken...
I think he does at the end.
Yes.
My
Now, this was an interesting set because, if you remember, we actually built this on a stage in Paris.
Yes.
But in actual fact, when you later see the room when it's empty, that was a large set. In other words, a location. So you had to actually build, and the only clue you get in this, of course, is the columns
match up. Yeah.
There's, well, you can't see it too well through this window reflection. But on the right there somewhere, there you are. Well, you can see the reflection of those columns in through the window here. But that's the only piece of real set that we matched to the one we built in the studio. There you are. The rats survive.
Oh,
there we go. Oh, dear. The reason changed. I can see why you don't do it anymore, Michael.
I'm Lewis Gilbert's an expert on all things Japanese. Because
yes, I've been a few times.
And, twice has a little sort of fish patch of this sort of thing. There goes the glass. Now, all the glass, I have to tell you, which was shot in Paris on a stage.
We have a lot of repeats on this.
All this glass was built in England and had to be transported.
Oh, there's the famous. That's the famous one.
Yes. Oh. But all this...
priceless. Millions worth dollars.
All this fancy glasswork was made in England and transported. And I have to tell you, the lorry that brought it all over to Paris was so well padded out with such double springs so as not to break anything.
Oh, that,
no, that's a nice touch.
Yes. The famous tradition in Bond, of course, is that everything has to get broken in the end. And then you wonder why your kids aren't too careful in the kitchen.
That's right, but kids love that, don't they? They love the break-up scenes.
Oh. Is there anything left here?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's left, that's the point.
Yeah, that's right. He took it out and looked at it.
They're up here in the belfry, right?
Yes. This was very clever, I always thought, I must say. Very cleverly done. Because again,
this is in Paris.
We built all this stuff in Paris, and it was a tricky set which we actually had to build on two levels of separate sets anyway.
God,
and to match it with the clock face, the very famous clock face, of course, in Mark Square.
Oh, yes, of course.
It was quite a tricky job.
Yeah. That's a good set.
Mm-hmm. Those sets are complicated because it's an enormous amount of height required.
Yeah. Well, it's a good set, though, Bill, though.
Yes. There it is, you see.
You know exactly what's going to happen, don't you?
Yes.
Now we had a lot of alternative lines here, didn't we? Yeah, Ear for Music.
Yes, I wanted to use that so much.
Play it again, Sam, as the it was the
got
final.
Got the vote in the end, didn't it?
Mm.
Now again, you see, interesting here, we used a live set in Venice, because that room that she walks back into is it's in the Danieli Hotel, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and we had a flood there, if you remember. We all had to come in and up to our knees in water in the lobby.
Oh, God, you remember that.
Yes, it was a weather cover set, actually. I seem to remember we kept jacking the generator up every foot as the tide kept coming. We had to stop shooting, jack the generator up another 2 feet, reconnect and start all over again. And these, in the meantime, these kids are trying to do a love scene.
And I remember thinking, if this vein keeps up, what do we do? We've got to set it up.
You only had one cover set and that was it, wasn't it? It was about 2 days' work.
And we also had the one of our barges sink one day.
Oh, yes. With all the props on.
Yes.
God, I've forgotten
that. Happened on a film.
Yes, it didn't actually sink so much as it never came up. Apparently, it was parked with a fridge underneath it. And, of course, as the tide goes down, people don't think the tide goes up and down in Venice, but it goes up and down about 3 or 4 feet, which was long enough for this barge to settle onto this old refrigerator. And the guy that was supposed to be looking after it was sleeping on another barge, and the tide rose, and the barge never came up.
Mm.
With all these fancy props on, by the way. You see all this stuff you're looking at now?
But this is a lovely room, isn't it, really, too?
Yeah.
But you can hire that, you know.
Yep.
I wonder if they keep... See, some of these locations, of course, they keep calling it the bomb this and the bomb that, Michael, don't they? I mean, there's still the bomb island off in Thailand.
That's right.
This relationship was copied really from Spy Who Loved Me, wasn't it?
Must have been the same writer, Lewis.
Maybe.
I can't quite see what you mean. What do you mean, Lewis? In this particular scene? Or?
Well, the idea that they're both agents.
They're both agents.
But Lois...
The sparring, the verbal sparring and verbal...
Lois was
verbal,
great.
Verbal.
She's beautiful, wasn't she?
Where are you planning on going from here?
I'm not planning on going anywhere.
Looks like Ken Adams' Gucci luggage there.
Yes.
It would be better off where. I thought it was Vuitton.
Probably, you're right. Sorry about that.
Understanding?
It was a set, though, wasn't it? Whatever.
Cooperation. Yes, we got into product placement a bit here.
Trust?
Out of the question.
Well, that was a very discreet sort of withdrawal, wasn't it?
We can't show humping on a Bond film, Christopher. I know what you used to write in the good old days, but, you know, the more discreet
that
now.
That was rather good in those days, actually. There was never any blood, and there was never any... it was a real family film, wasn't it?
Well, it still is. There's still PG-13.
And I think that's right.
They've all been PG-13 or the equivalent, though. They've never been R's or anything.
I hope you know what you're doing, Bond. I played bridge with this fellow, Drax.
007 doesn't usually push the panic button unless it's...
This is a very funny scene, which I...
Good morning. I see you've covered everything with our attention.
And I thought Michael Lonsdale really brought it off. He's, you know, sort of... He has a certain nice style about him.
Je ne sais quoi. And then he's French, you see.
Yes.
Is he? Yes, sir. Emilio, come here, amo adesso.
Well, he's half English, I think he's got an English.
Oh, this stuff,
English,
yes. Isn't it funny how you forget things, actually? That's right.
Yes, now referring back to the laboratory set,
mm-hmm.
which was built on a stage, we now cut, and this corridor was built on a stage, you now cut straight into...
Yes, a lovely... Venice.
It's in Venice.
Yes, it was a chateau in Venice. That's a lovely shot.
Now, the only thing that's reflected in the set is those columns. There. That archway and doorway of columns and the doorway there.
That was the only way we could show the set, actually.
An indistinguished company all wearing gas masks. Must excuse me, gentlemen, not being English, I sometimes find your...
This is a very famous room. I can't remember what room it is in a museum in Venice, and was very difficult to get permission to shoot in. In fact, I think we're the only people that ever actually got permission to shoot in this room.
It's a lovely room, isn't it? Beautiful.
Bond opens doors, you see.
Mm.
again, I'd forgotten how much beautiful, how many beautiful interiors there are in this movie. You know?
And here we see M out in the field. We don't see him out too often. We saw him in the Spy Love Me, of course, but actually going to Venice and being in part of the location is pretty rare.
Well, it meant that we didn't have to take Bond back to London.
Well, couldn't afford the airfares.
Couldn't afford the screen time.
I'm feeling like the British government.
It's a great little area right in here, wasn't
beautiful,
it?
Beautiful.
Just, and the light was so good. Every direction looks wonderful.
Oh, we're both in trouble.
And you don't even have to have the painters age it down, do you?
No.
It's a wonderful set to find there.
Got a lot of use out of Venice, you know?
Yes. Hard to light this set, too, because they...
Couldn't put scaffolding up.
No, we're very restricted as to how we were able to operate in there.
And here we have Jaws production.
He's on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is everybody's idea of, you know, what happens when you go through one of those gates, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oops. Interesting, this shot, actually. You realise how big he is
in
that shot.
Look absolutely, at that chap. Because he's a normal size,
yeah,
that fellow.
Well, everybody else is, yes. Now, here's an interesting scene coming up. Because, in case you've all forgotten, Roger got sick on this
That's
movie.
That's right, exactly.
He ended up with a kidney stone.
And he came late, didn't he?
As we moved from Paris to
Rio.
And he actually got taken off the charter flight, which the crew and Roger was on.
Oh, look at that. That's really cool.
And we had to shoot a week of material without Roger
That's
in
right,
it.
Yeah.
And there was a danger at the time that we were going to have to close the picture down.
Yeah.
Because Roger was in hospital in Paris. And the point about that shot of Concorde is that that was the Concorde that brought Roger
back to
the location.
Yeah.
And we shot, literally, him coming off the plane. We dressed him on the plane and shot him coming off the plane. And exactly... And I was with him because I had stayed on in Paris.
The only thing that I think was sad that Cubby, you know, the chauffeur meets him at the airport and he gets in the
now,
car.
This is a set decorator, by the way, playing it. I wouldn't say camp, would I?
Cubby would say when the car arrived to pick him up, and his first line was, "Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Biggs." Now, that doesn't mean very much, but it means a lot to people
who
know, you know.
We actually had a long debate about that, didn't we, Lewis, as to whether we should...
Well, Cubby said, no, it's not right, you shouldn't do it, and we didn't do it.
Well, in my view, Cubby quite rightly said we shouldn't be hiring a criminal.
No, he wasn't. Did he say that?
Oh, yes, because there was a long debate as to whether we should hire Ronnie Biggs to play the part of the chauffeur.
I didn't think that he would actually be Mr. Biggs, but I mean, it was
no,
just
there
a name.
There was a conversation then, about whether to do that, yeah.
Anyway, just on the Concorde, it was we went on the recce on the Concorde. It was great because it was 5.5 hours flying time.
Amazing.
From Paris to Rio, which
is normally 14 hours.
Right. Which is now 14 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, they've stopped it now, haven't they? They've stopped the flight. Yeah.
But you're quite right. I mean, the thing about Concorde
she was very
is
pretty, wasn't she, Emily?
Yes, Emily
Bolton.
Yes. But that's the point about Concorde. It's never really been used for its proper purpose, except for that huge flight to Rio. It had to refuel once, didn't it?
Yes.
Five and a half hours.
It was in West Africa, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Senegal. Dakar.
Now, well, that's a shot of the real carnival.
Yeah, this is the real carnival which we shot actually 1 year before film commenced, because we knew that we had to take the real carnival. Then the shots of Roger were done 1 year later when the main unit arrived, and this is our own carnival where the two actors, this is the original carnival, these are again the carnival that we produced ourselves.
Yes, the carnival in Rio takes place in February, and the following January is when we actually shot the
closer shot of Roger,
the real material.
And the girl, yeah.
And what it required us to do, of course, was to retain all the costumes that were used in the shots that we did as a second unit. These costumes, for example, we had to retain all those costumes so we could vaguely match it, as you can see in the background of the material that we shot
wonderful
a year
stuff
later.
This, though, isn't it? Wonderful atmosphere.
And of course, every year, they five or six different samba schools compete. And it's a competition, actually, the parade.
For the best song and the best costumes.
And they spend all year getting organised for it. It's an industry, almost. Mm.
Because I think the young people of Brazil and Rio, I think, are amongst the most beautiful in the world.
Yeah.
They're every kind of colour, and they were so beautiful.
And of course, a lot of this stuff, these girls hardly wearing anything at all, looks a bit extreme and Bondian, but the truth of it is, that's exactly what they do look like in carnival time, and how they dress. These very skimpy bikinis.
And it does go on for 3 days and three nights. I mean, they never seem to go to bed.
I've forgotten how little we have of Jaws until this moment, virtually.
Yes.
Well, you've got a clue, don't you? Only if you can get him, I think he's in. As if Jaws isn't tall enough anyway.
Yes.
You get another indication in a minute as to how big, really, Richard Kiel is.
Yeah.
When he picks Emily up.
Yeah. He didn't have any strength to pick her up.
No. But you see a long shot of them together in a little bit, I think, as I recall, because it's very often difficult to actually portray how tall or even short people are in movies.
But what is interesting, that this every side street where people were dancing away from the main carnival, they just everywhere they went, they were dancing.
Yeah. Look, there you are. Look, she looks like a doll. Did you see that?
Yeah. Film? Like King Kong.
Yeah.
Come on, Rogers.
Here's Rogers at the rescue.
Oh, goodness.
I remember this particular alley. It was absolutely filthy, Lewis.
Yes, it was rats.
Running with cockroaches,
yeah,
in fact.
And rats, yeah.
But colour film doesn't really... It's very difficult to make things look grubby on colour film. Night shooting, not your favourite occupation.
Oh, God, night shooting. Mind you, it wasn't so bad there because it was warm, wasn't it? It was never cold there.
Yes.
I think we should have done something better there.
With what?
Well, we'll reshoot it.
Can we reshoot that? I mean, Jaws being carried away by the crowd at that moment is not good enough, really.
No, but it would happen. I mean, it would happen because he'd have to... He can't battle his way through a whole lot of people in an alleyway.
Yeah, but we know Jaws. They would just bounce off him. He would be there immobile, wouldn't he?
I think you need some rest. Come on, I'll drop you off.
Okay.
I seem to remember there was quite a lot of product placement
Bill,
do you remember when we shot one day and then the guy said it's too
tall? I remember a lot about this sequence, Michael. If I've got allowed time to discuss it, I have to say that what happened here was that we had this rather complicated scene that you're seeing in the movie, and of course what you do in movies is storyboard everything so that you can shoot between the live location, process shots and stuff in the studio so that everybody knows what they're doing. But unfortunately what happened is that the storyboard, which is quite graphic in its sort of portrayal of what does happen, was left around on this particular location. Now, we've been negotiating with what we thought was the owners of this facility, and it turned out that they were the sons of the owner, and we'd done the deal with the sons. And when the father turned up and looked at the storyboard that had been left around, he was horrified to discover that what happens, of course, to his wonderful cable car is it gets crashed and smashed up at the end.
Wait till it'll come up in a moment, the actual thing that...
Yes. So, but the point about the story, of course, in this instance, is that he was horrified and stopped us shooting, or attempted to stop us shooting. And I remember quite distinctly Michael, myself and Cubby and a Brazilian lawyer tearing our hair out one night in the office as to what the hell we were going to do, because this guy literally was stopping our $200,000 a day operation.
I remember I said to the lawyer, can't we sue? And he said, oh, litigation is like knife fighting in the dark.
Absolutely.
Brazil.
I remember that perfectly. Like a knife fight in the dark. I said, well, that's handy. Anybody can win. I said, in which case, we've got to negotiate with this guy quick somehow or other.
Now that we're working together.
Still enough, I trust you.
And Cubby ended up finding the fellow that owned the TV stations, the card. Yeah. The guy.
Wonderful shot, that.
Yeah.
Beautiful, that.
But imagine, I mean, it's, you know, it sounds fine now, but we literally nearly had to stop shooting here at this point. Because this old boy thought he was gonna lose business. He genuinely thought that if this sequence was ever screened, that nobody'd ever go on his cable car again.
Of course, now it's a big landmark, bigger than it was.
She paid a fortune out of it. We should have been in that business instead of Bond.
Now, this was done in the studio, this part.
Yes.
This was done in the studio.
People often ask how this particular shot was done. Not that one, but the one he comes to bite on. I don't know whether we should tell them, really, do you?
No. Hold on a minute. Let's see.
There was. Do you remember when we got back in the studio to do some of this stuff? We had that guy come from California with the... We had a 110-foot front projection throw.
Oh, yes,
with one of the biggest projectors ever built.
Yeah, that's right. We
were shooting VistaVision plates.
The background plates were VistaVision because that gives you better definition and a wider spread.
This is it.
All this stuff here, yeah.
In actual fact, you're right about that. It was the first time VistaVision had been used since it was... There you go. Since...
Oh, now that's a funny one.
And that's Dickie Graydon, remember?
Yes, and I got so carried away with it, the long shot of him holding on.
You kept going.
Yeah, I kept going until something... Somebody said, I'm
so
fascinated.
Yeah, somebody say cut before the chap falls off.
That's all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's quite terrified, actually. No, that was Roger. Pretty good.
There goes.
Oh, yeah.
That's all for real,
there,
you see.
It's good sequence,
yeah.
This one, actually.
Yeah, this is for real. That is the thing about the Bond films, of course, that there is a believability about them, because most of the stuff we shot, and obviously not the close-ups,
again,
but all this stuff is for real.
Real.
You've got real people on a real cable car going down, and that's obviously a process shot.
They're jolly good, the process shots, aren't they?
But
nevertheless,
but it's based on a reality of doing it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
There we go, that gives you some idea of the scale, too.
Yeah.
And we stop them in the middle. Doink.
Hmm? God, that's a bit frightening, isn't it? That's amazingly good, this VistaVision stuff.
Yes. We actually got the cameras up and running again, VistaVision cameras. There were very few about at the time. So it was a Warner Brothers thing, wasn't it, originally?
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't think anybody had used a VistaVision camera for about 15 or 20 years before.
Rank had taken it up, hadn't they? Rank had taken it up, but then they let it drop.
Yeah.
Bond never learns, does he?
No.
I mean, you'd have thought after The Spy Loved Me he'd have realised this was a slightly no-win situation.
Gosh, I remember that girl. Who
no, that's real.
Yeah.
We used Martin Grayson and...
Dickie
Graydon, because he was the smallest stuntman around.
Yes, yes, because we had the guy playing Jaws was a normal size stuntman, so you had to have a little stuntman for Bond to keep the balance of size right.
That's a jolly good scene.
And Dickie's about what, 4'2", isn't he?
Oh yeah, this was a good idea.
Hang on. There you go. Let's see again. That's...
Yep.
But you can see on a storyboard how the owner of the piece might get a bit alarmed when you see about what's coming up. Now, the interesting thing about the actual crash, of course, is that we built the end of the cable car life-size at Pinewood.
That's right.
This was one of the few sets outside of the special effects space stuff that we did at Pinewood Studios.
That's right. that we did, that bit was done in Rio. Yes. Of them falling.
That's for real, and this is a set. Bosh.
That's jolly well done.
Yeah. But it was full size. I mean, again, you see, very often with models, you have the problem of scale.
Oh, no, this was a nice bit.
This was Christopher Wood's romantic touch.
Wheel of Fortune. She has to be sort of tiny.
Well, that's what he wanted.
It's based on a certain truth, by the way, because yes. Richard's wife is not exactly a big girl.
She's lovely, this girl, though, isn't she? She's so sweet.
Well, I suppose it's family entertainment, isn't it?
It was hard. What was that for?
Ooh, good.
What was that for?
Oh, yes.
God, there's plenty of stuff in this film, wasn't there? My God.
Oh, thank you, but we're in great shape.
Nice location again, you see, on the real place.
Little product placement coming up, wasn't there?
I think we probably overdid it a little bit.
British Airways, was it? Mm-hmm.
This was a nice little easy gag, but it's sort of, I think it's rather charming, don't you? How he gets out of this.
Yeah, it's very good.
You know, sometimes you can get overcomplicated with stuff.
Exactly.
It's rather fun, this. Some dopey guy, and that's all it is, look, Dean.
Seeing this makes you want to go back to Rio, in fact.
Yeah.
I think it was the wrecker you recalled as special actors, didn't
you? Yeah, maybe. Great.
I seem to remember for some reason this location on this bumpy road, which was all for some reason cobblestone, was a bit of a nuisance, and I can't remember now why we ended up having to shoot it up here. Look at it. Why did we do this? Oh, I know, for the view.
No, you wanted the thing to fall out the back, remember?
Yeah. But then it had to be on a cliff with a bit of a view, but it was a really, you know, some locations you think are going to be difficult and they're easy, like, well. And this one, it's real tough.
I can see that little loose touch of the hair coming
in. See those cobblestones there?
Mm. Yeah. This we did, those cobblestones we did back of the studio.
This bit?
The thing running down.
Yes, there we go.
I didn't see that. What happened then?
Well,
oh, he ends up
in the...
Stuck in the mouth of the girl.
Yeah.
Did we get the copyright or whatever it's called?
This is...
Continuing...
Yeah, we were using bits of other music at the time.
The Magnificent Seven.
This Magnificent Seven.
This was a continuation of a little joke that we played in Spy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Using other people's
stuff.
That's
a beautiful shot, isn't it? Which I'd totally forgotten.
Yes, this is in Rio.
And this is where they meet Q and all that.
Yeah.
Now, where was this? Was this the...
This
was a convent, wasn't it?
Yes,
this was. This wasn't in...
This is in Venice.
This was in Venice,
right.
You see, again, it shows you how you chop and change. We're in Rio, but actually we shot this in Venice.
Oh, yeah, good
There's
stuff.
A courtyard,
yes,
again, that comes up, I recall.
Did you see him do his stuff over the bodies?
Yep.
Look as though you've just fallen off the mountain.
Well, it's funny you should say that. As a matter of fact,
I must say, M seems to have a lot of bases abroad latterly.
Yes. Well, it stops him from going back to London every time.
That's right.
Well, I think it's ever since the standing set broke up, isn't it?
That's true, on the left here, yes.
Yes.
Have that ready for Army Day.
Yes, sir. Where's M?
He's in the office over there. This way.
Good morning, W, sir.
Morning, sir.
You're just in time.
Yes, we probably shot all this in Venice, so we didn't have to take dear old Bernard all the
That's
way
fine.
To Rio.
That was perfectly good, wasn't it? It looked absolutely brilliant. Kane was very good at pumping this sort of stuff up.
Hello. You seem to be all right, 007.
Thank you.
It's a highly toxic nerve gas that appears to have no effect on animals.
May I see the formula?
Highly toxic nerve gas that has no effect on animals.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. That's why the rats survive.
This is a Bond film. You can believe it implicitly.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more,
all made from orchids, black orchids.
And what's more, James Bond is a chemist as well. Fluent in Latin.
He's a Cambridge man, you know.
Yeah.
Is that why he's a spy?
Possibly. What's
the upper reaches of the Arakanoko?
And fast.
And I've got something to get him there. If 007 can be trusted to look after it.
Obligatory map.
Were you getting a map at home, did you, Christopher?
Yeah.
Here we go. Well, the interesting thing again here, of course, is this actually is a location in
Brazil. Yes.
We went all over the place.
That's right.
Bill and I went all over the place, and you actually went down to Panama, was it?
Yes.
Look at a 40-foot tidal river.
Yes.
And in the end, I found this place in Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, you did the sensible thing, which was to find a river with a gas station next to it. I mean, we'd gone everywhere.
And then the rest of it was the falls that shot in Rio.
Yes. I mean, to some extent, this is a clear case of find the location and make the sequence work round it.
Yep.
Because, as I recall, Cubby in the previous movie had been taken to see Iguazu Falls as part of a sort of junket when they were releasing the film before, I guess, must have been Spy. And he came back and said, guys, you've got to shoot these falls because they are incredible. So in a way, before even we got to a script stage, I think, that was a prerequisite to actually shoot these falls.
What was great about this location, supposed to be in the middle of the Amazon, is that there's there are actually houses in Florida just behind all those things. It's a big suburb. So they had a motel, five miles away.
That's right. Yes. Yes, we went down there just to shoot Roger.
But it was so hard to find a place that looked like those jungles in the Amazon.
Yes. I think it's true. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it's very good.
You certainly didn't find them in Manaus. We went all the way there.
We went all the way up the Amazon for real.
No, this is good stuff.
It's sometimes amazing the amount of distances you have to travel to end up with the locations you do end up with. It's a sort of...
Yeah.
You travel hundreds of thousands of miles.
The music is good here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
I seem to remember we had terrible trouble at Iguazu Falls because they ran out of water, didn't they?
Well, below the falls you do, yes.
When we went on the recce, there was steam and water, and it was fantastic. But I thought when you shot the movie, it was really difficult.
Yes, there was not the same amount of water going over, that's correct. And actually what happened, of course, is the boat got stuck on the end.
Yeah.
There's a very famous shot of John Richardson trying to dislodge the damn thing.
Yeah, that was
which is more of a stunt, actually, than the stuntmen have to do.
In the end, we had to get the French, did a match shot of it coming over. Which works reasonably well.
Which is in the picture.
Yeah, which works reasonably well.
But they are a magnificent sight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are really something.
They're the second largest falls in the world, aren't they?
Yeah.
And that's the match shot.
Mm-hmm. When we had that English guy who was going to do this, how many times he tried this, flying over this thing.
Yes.
Afraid to be sucked down because of the downdrafts and all that.
Yes, it was quite dangerous, actually.
There he goes.
That's good.
Yeah.
And of course, the trouble is where he landed. I remember we had a complication because the you were never quite sure.
You can't beat the old ones.
You're never quite sure where this chap was going to land with his hang glider.
He just crashed in the woods.
Yes, but the problem was that the Iguazu Falls is at the confluence of three different countries that weren't really that friendly: Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay. And we were never quite sure which country he was going to land in, and we needed permission to overfly all three countries.
Well, once you got the shot, you didn't give a damn, really, did you?
And then with the snake, do you remember the snake and all this problem with the snake?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes.
We brought these two matching 24-foot
That's
pythons
nice, isn't
out.
This is a classic scene, isn't it?
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. That's for real, you see. Lovely shot. In fact, that's the only bit, or this little bit, is the only bit you guys shot there, the first unit. Lewis, do you remember you did that on your way down to...
Yeah. Beautiful.
See, it's a good job widescreen's back in fashion. You didn't get that shot before.
Yeah.
Now, this was nearly your dad.
And that's it. That's somewhere else altogether. That's the second unit shot in Guatemala.
Guatemala and Tikal.
Yes.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we took a recce all over Mexico and Tikal for these.
This was in the studio, wasn't it?
This is back up in Paris, in famously Kerm's experimental set. I have to say, we had some difficulty with
this. This was a good set, though.
And ended up having to bring a lot of people from Pinewood because there was so much plaster work involved, using fiberglass, which was a new thing to be using in movies at that time, that we ended up having to get a lot of guys from Pinewood to actually fashion this set.
This was a good set, though, wasn't it, really? Very good.
And sort of this interesting throwbacks, because on the right-hand side there, which we commissioned on the recce, is a wonderful glass chandelier. You'll get another look at it probably in a minute, which was actually built. And it's nothing to do with the movie.
She was great.
But actually built in that same glass works that you actually see in the movie. There it is, look, on the right. It's a wonderful chandelier.
Yeah.
So you got all the girls in this shot, huh, Lewis?
Yeah.
They all appear together. Yeah. Don't do a lot, but they all appear.
Damn right.
So when they pull the trap door,
she was
attractive. Now this snake, we brought these from Tarzana down to Florida, and to chase the guy, they had to, they were 400 pounds, these bloody snakes.
Terrifying.
You mean the weight of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they were
huge. That's a good shot, though, isn't it? That's very good.
And then we, and this was all done at Crystal Springs, Florida.
Yeah. But the mixture of the real and the first and second unit stuff is very, very good.
Yeah, then I sent them I sent them photographs of what the snake looked like, and of course they went to the zoo and found another one and made the
use that.
Made the prop look like not the real one we shot on, but the one at the zoo, which
beastly thing.
Shows how big he is here. This shot.
Yeah. Look at the hands.
Yeah, this is when you see how big he is.
Now that is Roger, and he looks tiny, doesn't he?
Mr. Bond, you defy all my attempts to plan an amusing death for you. You're not a sportsman, Mr. Bond. Why did you break off the encounter with my pet python?
I discovered he had a crush on.
Who wrote this stuff?
Brilliant. They love it.
Now here's a
of course, Roger never likes to be wet, and Marianne plays this whole scene wet.
Yeah. Yes.
It looks rather good. Say, wet,
these sets are pretty fantastic, aren't they?
Now this is one of the vertical sets.
Yes, this was very difficult to shoot because originally they were going to be all moving, but they had to settle for still pictures.
Well, some of them worked.
Yes, one or two. Yeah, we had one or two, but very little.
But you're right, Michael. They were all vertical sets. Of course, the design feature being that they should look a bit like Tikal, and which are up and down buildings.
Yeah.
Rather than wide ones.
But there's about half the set above us that you can't see.
Never saw, yes.
The curse of a civilization. Why did Cabin used to call it? He had a lovely name for it.
Well, here you go. The wigwam. Yeah, the wigwam.
It was a wigwam set.
Here you're working at trying to get the set.
Yes.
Doing everything to try and get the freaking set in.
Yes.
Mr. Bond. As you discovered, I have improved.
Yeah. You see, our historians, years from now, movie historians, will say, oh, this upward-looking, downward-looking is a very artistic thing, and it's only because you want to shoot the set.
Yeah. So we say, can we see the set, Lewis? Never mind about anything else. That's about as long a shot as you can get on it. And that was another problem, actually, because we were limited in stage size in Paris. It was difficult sometimes to build these huge sets and then get back far enough.
But that was a case where you didn't need to build this set because you could have easily just built half of it and then matted in one or two shots of anything you wanted, including moving stuff and all sorts of.
But the fact is, we did build it and then we couldn't get far enough back to shoot it.
And there it is going off, you know.
So these are all the simultaneous launches, which.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of those shots are actually genuine NASA shots of the shuttle taking off.
Yes, but the shuttle wasn't ready, though, was it? No, it wasn't. I don't think
no,
so.
It was supposed to fly before
the film.
You're
quite right.
We had a race for them, and we always used to joke, remember, Michael?
We got off the ground before they did.
Yeah, we'll put ours into the air before yours, and we did, by about a year or so.
You know, all Derek Mennings to work here. It's did a great job of making
it. Yeah, it was good. It was good again.
But what was nice also about it is that NASA was totally cooperative with everything we did on this.
Houston, Ames. That's right.
And we built all these things absolutely correctly as they were doing it themselves.
Now, I remember I was surprised. I don't know, it was with you, Mike, when they were just sticking on the tiles onto the.
Yeah, that was out in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah, and I was rather surprised because there was just an ordinary girl sticking the tiles on like it was in a bathroom.
Yes.
And it was.
Yes, it was all this high technology, and you thought. And the most complicated thing they were suffering from was the heat.
We actually got to walk through these, didn't they?
Yes.
When they were under construction.
Yes. In the actual hangar factory there.
But these sets are pretty formidable.
This is the only part that's really kind of out of the novel.
Yeah.
That he's underneath the rockets when they're going to go off. This is a great set. A model set and live inserts in it.
This is this actually all worked.
Yeah.
This set of complicated hydraulics involved in a full-scale thing.
Quite brilliant.
That's a model. It's very interesting that you juxtaposition all the different shots here, from live action to model.
One of the problems we had was the actual.
Now, that's a mixed shot there. We shot one bit, and then in the camera, sort of reshot it, Lewis.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't get enough fire stuff, could we, at one time? Do you remember that? It was very difficult to get the actual launch, the amount of fire that came out, flames, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, this is a good shot, too.
Yeah.
Come on,
it's quite complicated, all this setup.
Got the Oathseeker watch.
Yeah.
On the few occasions when we don't see the gizmo demonstrated beforehand, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
This one. Obviously standard kit.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Don't have that
Valentine. Yeah. God, what a joke.
Yeah, this stuff is quite complicated to get that.
It's quite difficult, yeah. And this stuff is very difficult. Yes. Chasing them.
Mm-hmm. And dangerous, actually, potentially.
Yeah.
Fire's the one thing that is quite tricky.
Well, the water on the spy was pretty difficult too, wasn't it?
Yes, but fire can be, you know, is a killer if it gets out of control.
All that stuff from... we went to the, in Mexico City, we went to the museum there, the archaeological museum, got all these references for all this stuff. Because these are all Mayan, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, all those statues.
Aztec and Mayan mixed up.
Then what you'll see here, I think, in a minute, is then yet another location here. Now, this is actually some underground caves in Paris.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we've suddenly gone from wherever we are in South America to some of these... I'm not sure what they were constructed for, Lewis, but we first looked at
they
these...
They were
quarries, weren't they?
Yes, they were quarries, but it was... What do you call the stuff, the powder stuff that comes out? Oh, God, what was it?
Plaster of Paris.
Something like that. Oh, I think it was Plaster of Paris, yes.
That's why it's called that.
Probably.
Because it's from these things.
From these lines, yes. That's right.
Huge, massive things there. It's a good location, actually.
It was a wonderful location, wasn't it?
Good sound effect on that.
Look back at that girl.
Mm-hmm.
Posters, go. Launchpad, go. External LO2 pressure.
Now, these are all sets we built at in Paris.
In Paris,
we employed every single sound stage available in the city.
They practically brought the French film industry to a halt.
Well, it did, in the sense that we used every available
stage. Yeah.
Three studios,
right, right,
which logistically made it quite complicated because we'd have to build one set and move to another location or another studio altogether to shoot the next scene.
Now this is all Metting's work.
Yes. That's sort of good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, of course, all this space material we shot in camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas other people were starting to use computers for this, because of the time we needed to get the film ready, because uniquely, I think, amongst movies, as we
very
all know, Bond films always have a release date before you've started shooting the thing. So you're up against a huge deadline to get the film completed. Because the Queen's seeing it on Thursday the 24th of whatever it is. So even before you start shooting the picture, you know that you've got to finish it, whether you like it or not. And we realised that if we were going to shoot all this space material, we'd have to actually shoot it in a quicker way than was then available to us by using rather long-winded and extremely time-consuming computer work.
This was done back in Pinewood.
It's quite effective, this model stuff, really, when it was shot, you know.
Yeah, and the Weinbach, I think some of it was 98 times or something.
Well, there was one famous shot. There's one famous shot, I can't tell where it is in the picture now, where we actually exposed the film, I think it was something like 80 times, which meant to a layman that you photographed it, wound it back, then re-photographed it. So, of course, this particular little piece of film, which was about, I don't know, less than 100 feet long, became the most precious thing that was ever invented.
Which is funny, the most...
And you didn't know whether you had it until you developed the thing.
In the most technical of industries, it's funny that that's how it was always done, even way back to silent film.
I think...
W.H. Griffith used that technique.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the shot is when the Space Marines arrive.
I think it probably
later
is.
Later in the picture, when the U.S.
I can't now identify which shot it is, but But a lot of that stuff was certainly more than 20 passes through the camera, and we shot it at Pinewood. Another movie.
What's going on here? We should ask the director what's going on.
No, I remember now. He was taking them up to get a perfect race.
Yeah, he's going to let everyone else die.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Is that what this is all about?
Each one of those elements is a separate way.
Yes, yes. We shot all that material at Pinewood. Robin Brown was very much involved, I remember. Yes. Weeks and weeks he was in this dark and sort of long, narrow stage at Pinewood. And as you say, Michael, we were terrified because we couldn't see any of it until the final thing when it went to the lab. The day it went to the lab, you know, the idea that there might have been a stoppage in the laboratory doesn't bear thinking about now when I look back on it. This is a lovely shot. I think this is a really lovely shot. It's a dawn in space.
Mm-hmm. Comes on very nicely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is this Meddings working?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the station. St. Pancras Station.
Suitably dramatic.
And that was Ken Adams' design. We said, you know. But Ken, I don't think we designed a space station like that. He said, it looks beautiful. So. But it has some logic to it. It's all rotating to give you artificial gravity. Yes. And it has pods and things. And
well, Ken had worked on 2001, didn't he?
Yes, he'd had his feet in the water with Stanley Kubrick, hadn't he? But I mean, it's based. I mean, the whole business. At least we had the guts to tackle the gravity problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that subliminally lets down a lot of these space movies is they sort of ignore it. Like there's not a problem.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite expensive, isn't it, to do?
I don't care about that, Lewis. It's not authentic.
Once you get inside, you see.
If this was good, all these dockings. You
know? Yes.
But as Lewis was saying earlier, it is slow, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, it has to be slow. But that's one of the problems.
I think it's slow, but I think it was interesting to people at the time.
Yes. Yeah. You have to remember, this is 20 years ago, and this was cutting edge.
Well, I don't think anybody had ever done anything like
that. And it is aesthetically very, very beautiful.
No, I think you're right, Michael. At the time, of course, this was exciting stuff. It looks a bit old-fashioned now because we're used to space movies. I think all you'd had up to that point was 2001 and the first Star Wars.
This was
for many years one of the highest grossing Bond films.
Yes.
Yeah.
For many years until GoldenEye.
Yeah, but you've got to remember with GoldenEye, your seat prices were about four times what they were when this was released.
Yeah, but this is considered one of the highest grossing of all times in constant dollars. Yeah.
Again, you see, we've sort of tackled the weightless business and had to do all this on wires.
That's right, for real.
With no ability to paint them out. So I suppose everybody now will be looking for the wires, but the fact is, you can't see them.
No, that's very good.
Another lovely Ken Adams set there, which is doomed to be blown up.
I don't think this, if you put this film into a cinema, I don't think it would be a disgrace today.
Quite the reverse. I mean, I just visually, as a mass of designs, it holds your attention, doesn't it?
I think so.
I think it's interesting that some of the switches and gear like that is rather old fashioned because now we're used to sort of touch switches, whereas we used to go in for dials and it was all very much analog. And there it goes. And it starts to rotate, and that gives you the gravity at the edges.
Yeah. Gravity, no.
Which, of course, again, was something that we discussed with NASA for real, and is how they intend to do it.
Yeah, and it's also the way Bond kind of disrupts it.
But do they intend to put these girls NASA intend to put these girls into space?
I hope so. Not much point in doing it otherwise, is there?
As long as they take you along.
Poor old Jules, he's got a duck.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember a gag here, Lewis, which of course made everybody have a jolly good laugh. There was one particular scene we were shooting, and on the first take, some wag had decided to get a stagehand dressed up in an outfit, and there they are in one of these tunnels, and there's a ladder suddenly appears and starts washing the window from the outside.
That's right, yeah. That's so strange, isn't it, in Russia? It's funny. So weird.
Those are the globes I saw in Venice, with the nerve gas vials inside.
Just in case you as an audience have lost the plot.
Yes.
First, there was a dream. Now, there is reality. Here.
Here's Christopher's I'm going to rule the world speech.
Yeah. Well, we created a new super race, a race of perfect physical specimens.
Oh, perfect specimens.
Have been selected.
Including Joel's, he's
suddenly clocking on, isn't it? Yes, it's kind of...
And shape it in the image.
There's a valuable lesson for mankind in this film. Terrestrial empire. We've all got to live together.
Well, this speech is a touch like H.G. Wells' Things to Come, isn't it?
I thought it would get yourself a decent dentist.
From their first day on Earth, they will be able to look up and know that there is law and order.
Exactly.
It's sort of classic Bond, isn't it? The heavy's got to be definitely a complete, absolute loony.
What?
And nothing changes, does it?
No.
I haven't seen the latest one, Michael, but I guess he's trying to rule the world again, is he?
It's a woman, isn't it?
Oh. No, it's a... what's his name?
Who's ruling the world, this one?
That's right. Gotta pay your £7.
Oh, God.
£7? Bloody hell.
So what are we doing here? Oh, they're,
level 10.
We better hurry up and do something because, well, here we are, back into weightlessness. This was all fairly accurate.
Yes, because they're going towards the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a centrifuge, really. Works on the same principle as that old thing you used to see in the circus when you, in the fun fair, do you remember? It goes whirling round and round and you're stuck on the edge. What the hell's that? I can't remember what that was. Oh, I know, that's the jamming system. That's the other little tricky thing, of course. It was invisible to the Earth, this thing, of course.
Yeah, no...
It doesn't bear too much analysis, though, because, you know, what happened to the shuttles that go up? But anyway, Dan, let's talk about that.
Yeah,
okay. Well, I want to know, all these people who get killed, who informs the next of kin?
She doesn't like hitting chaps, doesn't she, as well?
Mm.
Give him back as well.
Oh,
good way.
She does. Not all girls can do who left.
This is where we do the NASA VASA trick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Way above most people, that Christopher.
Behave.
I'm not quite sure he does that. It's a bit of a sort of... hooligan, really, Bond, isn't he?
He seems a bit sort of strange, doesn't he? In a super high-tech world, he has to pull the plug right there.
Something good, Yank. Now, look, there's a... there's a good-looking chap. I've just remembered this scene.
That's me.
That's when you had hair, Michael.
Yep. God, that's amazing.
Yes.
Listen, General Gogol, we didn't put it up there.
Neither did we.
Ah, I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
We resurrected old Noble, where his name was.
Yes.
Together with a young lady, as usual.
Yes. Nice touch the snow outside, don't you think?
Well, what about the costume? That is a bit like Father Christmas.
Red, you see, red. You know. Russian.
It's like the cardinal.
Oh, no, I think we thought he was a bit, a bit of a communist, didn't we?
Problems.
Marine astronaut to launch that.
Launch pre-program complete, sir.
Launch globe number one.
Yeah.
So this stuff's going out now to poison
the
world.
Yeah.
Yes. Off it goes.
Oh, there it goes.
Guys better hurry up and do something.
It's aimed at Hollywood, actually.
Yes.
What's that case? That case, no. No hurry.
This is now the ticking clock, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something's out there, and our friend James has got to get it before it all, the world gets blown up.
It's taken a long time.
He always
to catch up with
him,
hasn't they?
Fire and lightning.
Is the Space Marines taking it off?
Yes, this is the big launch now.
This is the cavalry going.
TDRSS reports a launch, sir. Continental USA. Vandenberg.
And the launch is scheduled. Check radar jamming system. Well?
Jamming power supply and backup have failed, sir.
Investigate immediately.
Investigate number 28, immediately.
We meet again.
You appear with the tedious inevitability of an unloved season. I didn't think there were any seasons.
That's definitely a Christian Wood line, isn't it?
And lonely winter. And the treacherous Dr. Goodhead. Despite your efforts, my finely wrought dream approaches its fulfillment.
Your dream, whatever sort of nightmare it is, has no chance, Drax.
You think not? We shall see.
We're coming up to second launch position.
Launch globe number two.
A lot of this is kind of a bit technical, isn't it? Sort of, you know, yeah. As to what's happening where.
You could cut quite a bit of this.
Oh, too late now, Lewis.
No doubt you have realized the splendor of my conception.
God. The splendor of my conception.
We got a lot of value out of this set. It sort of worked well, didn't it?
Yeah, very well.
Because it's on different levels and has different sort of feel to it.
A designated area, each capable of killing 100 million people. The human race, as you know it, will cease to exist.
Then what about all their families and...
You can't make an armor without breaking it, you know this.
On course to intercept us, sir.
Activate laser. Prepare to destroy spacecraft. You see, my dear Bond, we're well able to protect ourselves against all enemies. Allow me to introduce you to the airlock chamber. Observe, Mr. Bond, your route from this world to the next. And you, Dr. Goodhead, your desire to be America's first woman in space will shortly be fulfilled.
You on your flying
Christopher. Love it, love it.
If you like, yes.
And, of course, anyone not measuring up to your standards of physical perfection.
Yeah, he's going to sow the seeds of doubt here.
That's right. Yes, thinks. This is where the bubble comes out of his head.
Interesting. Most interesting. Yours. Expel them.
No.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking he's next.
Jaws! Mm-hmm. You obey me!
Jaws becomes a quiddy.
Expel him!
Oof. Now that's interesting, isn't it? That's one of the few occasions where the escape was caused nothing to do with Bond, really, where somebody else did.
Well, he
orchestrated it, didn't he?
He kind of sowed the seeds of doubt in him. So here, he's getting inside her. Now, doesn't Bond have to do something at this point?
Initiate firing sequence.
Initiated. U.S.
spacecraft.
Oh, I see. This was decided,
Thinking.
Range 15. Range 10.
Yes, this is where we make use of real sort of technology to make the thing happen. That stops the rotation.
Yeah. That was good once gravity disappeared. I think that was quite interesting. That was the most difficult, I think, of the shots, when they all float around.
Yes. Again, all had to be done sort of for real. This was a complicated shot, actually.
It was very complicated. There's this kind of beauty about it, too, isn't
it? But it is difficult going from action to, you know, to this kind of thing and then back to action and so on.
Yeah, but this is very interesting, though, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting, but it's sort of unconventional so in terms of the end of a Bond movie, isn't it?
Well, no, of course, you'll get that in a minute.
Here go our spacewalkers.
Yeah.
Number one platoon. EVA.
That was, remember him?
EVA.
He was the son of Michel Morgan.
Oh, really? Yeah.
This is one of those that took a lot of...
Well, we shot this, as I recall, on the 007 stage, because we needed an enormous amount of depth.
Yeah. It was all this stuff here that took all the wind back.
Yes. Mm. And all these lasers had to be put on by hand.
Yes, well, this was, again, was sort of...
The rotoscoping, yeah.
Yes.
But not too many people had done this before.
This type of shot.
Well. And it's a mixture of model, live action... and stuff rotoscoped on it.
That's good.
Yeah, well, I still think, you know, if you put this film out, it does stand up in its own.
See, that shot, for example, you needed a lot of depth there.
Yeah.
And we black velveted out the whole of the 007 stage.
Yes. Here was the goodies.
The guard at every entrance in this satellite. Reports intruders progress throughout the space station. Number three, glow ready for...
She just said monitor report.
Proceed!
Yeah.
Intruders attacking command module. Check. Group one. These guys got bats.
They were assuming they have an electric charger or something, I imagine.
Hold your fire!
Corridor 5, penetrate.
Oh, he looks like head of the Mekons or something, doesn't he? You know, out of an old Turkish epic.
Well, there you are, Lewis, blowing up another Ken Adams set.
Oh, yes.
Remember how unhappy Ken was every time we blow up these sets?
Yes.
Maybe.
Well, Lois also can aim a gun well. She,
she was quite athletic, wasn't she? Mm.
We build the thing at vast expense, then to destroy it.
Always.
You could actually make Ken the villain of the next Bond movie, and he fights back when people start trying to, you know, destroy his set, and suddenly takes over the whole studio, and then the world. So, Mr. Bond. Looks bad. Looks bad, Drax. Damn.
At least I shall have the pleasure of putting you out of my misery.
Another one of Christopher's lines here.
Precious, aren't they?
Did he watch it?
About time he used that gag. He's
He's had that on his wrist for 10 reels.
I know, and he hasn't used it.
Well, he used it to save himself in this.
I like the way he assists him in. He's not actually going straight away, is he? Oh, no, he's gone.
Very good.
He's probably still out there, you know.
Mind you, he must have earned a lot of money.
When you get round to Bond 21, Michael, you probably resurrect him. He's still out there. There's a lump of something.
He's freeze-drying.
I wanted him to expand, you remember, so that Bond could say he always had an inflated opinion of himself. But we didn't do that, did we?
I think we used that gag.
Did we?
Little Let Die. Destroyed. Get off, the whole place is falling apart.
I remember him saying the line about, did he say the line about one small step for him?
No.
I think he did.
I don't know, he might have done.
I don't think he did.
He might have said it in his speech. Did he say it in his speech?
No, he said it either just before he departs. I mean, I'm certain he's in there somewhere.
You sure? There's no doubt about it, good stereo sound helps these movies enormously.
Oh, yeah, it sure does.
Moonraker 5, that's it.
Yes.
There you go. Tell them what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Do it, and they tell you what. Tell them what you did.
Well, they never know, would they, this sort of thing. It was really very technical, all this stuff, wasn't it? I'm not sure that... whether it actually comes across when it's slow motion and when it isn't, you know, when there's gravity and when there isn't.
Yeah.
If you're just one of the...
I don't know whether that's
sure, clear absolutely.
Or not. No, probably
it's
not.
It's very difficult to explain, isn't it, really? But it doesn't matter, they know something about it.
Well, I think the point is you need to try and be as authentic as possible, these days when things go to video and people start studying the logic of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not illogical. The whole film is not... is possible.
Guys, better hurry up and get off. You're going to blow up if you don't.
Yes.
Oh, isn't it here where he...
Oh.
Oh.
Docking release system jammed.
Oh.
He's looking for his friend.
Here comes a bit of an unusual Bond schmaltz coming up. sweet.
Complete with romantic music.
Yeah. Yes. This is a theme of music. It is nice music. It's good. We recorded all the music in Paris as well.
Yeah.
Release the door lock. I'll see if I can operate it manually.
It's jammed too.
This was the return of John Barry, wasn't it? He didn't do the one before.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
No, Marvin Hamlisch did the one before, yeah.
Here's to us.
And he speaks.
Yeah, that's right.
He speaks.
That's the only dialogue you ever hear
from Jaws.
That's right.
That would be a great trivial pursuits question, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Jaws, we can't disengage. The docking release system is jammed. Can you help us?
Oh, she's interpreting. Did he know that everybody called him Jaws?
He does now.
We're free.
Now, the interesting thing is we went to a long paraphernalia here to explain that maybe Jaws survives.
Well, later they say it was picked up, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you didn't take advantage of the fact, Michael.
No, we didn't.
No, well, you can't. It's just enough, isn't it? It's two twices. Goodbye, Ken Adams set.
I have the three globes on the screen. We should have a visual in a minute.
So here they're going to chase these things down.
This is definitely a clicking top clock.
There it is.
The laser's on automatic. Code 945-SET.
She knows the code.
She knows everything.
She knows almost as much as James Bond.
And he's going to smug us, isn't he?
Got it.
One down, two.
Works well, this secret section.
Yeah, it's well done, actually.
It's quite nice after all the battle sequence, yeah. Sort of. Almost the sort of.
Remember they painful. Told us you'd skip on the atmosphere?
Right? Yes. And then we incorporate. Yes, that's right.
And so all this is the skipping of the atmosphere stuff.
Again, sort of based on what we found out from NASA in the research stage, made it work for the movie. And of course, that is the most complicated aspect of getting these things down, isn't it? Getting back into the atmosphere and not burning up.
I think you'll miss this last one.
It is.
This is where your tiles come in handy, Lewis.
Yes.
Kept falling off in reality. That's
incredible.
What the whole of the base of the shuttle is consists of these ceramic tiles.
Yeah.
And I remember now, they said the complicated bit is not the tiles, we can't find the glue that actually will not burn up when it gets hot.
Yeah.
And that was at the time, the whole thing that was holding up their first launch.
No function, knows.
Automatic firing system negative.
Must be the heat.
It is, it's getting hot as they hit the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Sort of the, similar idea to Star Wars, isn't it? You know, you go, you know, at the end he has to go on to manual. It's
yes.
Kind of the
yeah.
Man versus machine idea that yeah. All
yes.
Always come, it always
there
comes down to that.
Yeah.
Well, so, again, it's sort of based on truth, because I think the well, of course, famously, and they made a movie about it in the end, the Apollo 13 was all to do with everything packing up except except human ingenuity.
Steady.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know you're near the end now, aren't you? All the needs is the final.
Yeah, and we have the re-entry line.
Yeah.
Who thought that up? Subtle, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, not as subtle as the one we talked about the bends.
Right. Okay. Dr. Goodhead reported their position 20 minutes ago. They're just coming into range of our tracking ship in the Pacific Ocean. We should have audio-visual within a few minutes from the remote onboard TV monitors.
Oh, that's right. They were, of course.
There we are in weightlessness again.
Yeah.
It's the brazier and the knickers that are in the background floating around. It's fascinating.
In our two countries, I'm having it patched directly to the White House and Buckingham Palace.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure Her Majesty will be fascinated.
We have audio visual.
Ah, at last.
My God, what's Bond doing?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
This wasn't a bad line, actually.
The cinema actually broke up on that line.
James.
I think it may be time to go home.
Take me around the world one more time.
That's quite nice, too.
That's a bit
malty, but...
And the music rarely is great at this point.
They don't make pictures like this anymore, do they?